All right, good friends, welcome back. We're now in hour number two, and we're speaking tonight with Kelly Bocar Vlahos about the Republican convention, about what happened there, and she was there firsthand. She got a good look, and we're hearing some interesting things. Kelly, before we continue about the dominant subject coming out of Minneapolis-St. Paul, and that is the Sarah Palin pick, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's get from you. I understand you attended some of the Ron Paul activities. We on We the People Radio Network are very much interested in you know, Ron Paul's place in the Republican Party, in the modern Republican Party. What did you see in Minneapolis-St. Paul as far as that went?
Well, I attended the last night, the culminating evening of the Ron Paul Rally for the Republic. And that was Tuesday night, where they had, well, throughout the day, they had a series of speakers with the culminating speech coming from, obviously, Ron Paul himself. There was about an estimated 10 to 12,000 people in this stadium, kind of a stadium, but a civic center type setting. It was called the Target Center. And it was really amazing. I mean, it was, in essence, his own convention, complete with all of the big screens and the music and the placards, and there just was a real a really nice energy there that I hadn't been experiencing over at the Excel Center where the Republican convention was held. I mean, we're talking about an eclectic group of people ranging from, some really crunchy conservatives to libertarians, some kind of more liberal-leaning types, all the way to just your sort of, button-and-tie, conservatives and disenchanted Republicans. But a lot of intelligent views and ideas constantly floating around, people talking, sharing ideas, excited about Ron Paul. And it was a nice respite for me personally. And when he spoke, it was a very ideas-packed speech. He talked about a lot of the issues that I have heard come from Republican mouths, over the years. These were not issues that were far out, crazy, wacky, kooky, the way the media likes to portray, Ron Paul and his views. These were fundamentally
the corporate media likes to portray. Let's be clear, okay?
Right.
Not here on alternative
exactly,
media.
Exactly. These were fundamentally conservative views. They were not. I mean, I personally would not agree with 100%, but it would be close because these weren't issues that like I said, that weren't essentially, conservative establishment views, particularly among Republicans before 9/11, before President Bush came to town. So
let me ask you something: Were you surprised by this, or was this what you expected? Did this, especially juxtaposed between, what we said was a sort of robotic response over at the Excel Center?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I was just like, I wasn't surprised at what I was hearing or even seeing. It's just that the energy was a lot different. And, I'll give you an example. After, after I left the next night, I was back at the Republican convention, and it was right about the time that Rudy Giuliani was taking the stage, and I was interviewing some delegates, and I ran into this guy from a Spanish-speaking radio station who had been to Denver. He'd also been to the Ron Paul rally, and then he was there. And he said, he talked about the energy level in Denver. He mentioned a lot of the tension at the beginning, too. But he called it this sort of, like, transcendent feeling that he had gotten at the Obama rally. He said when a friend of him had taken him to the Ron Paul rally. He wasn't too familiar with the issues, but he was taken aback by the intellectual vigor of it, but also the sort of real genuine excitement for Ron Paul that he had also felt was, it was transcendent. It was like, hey, I want to know more about this guy. These people obviously are, you know, really jacked up, you know, and the arguments he makes are really sound. And then he said he came to the Republican convention and it was just none of it. It was flat. It was robotic, you know, and he had guessed probably rightly that Sarah Palin would obviously bring a little bit more juice to the proceedings. But he just, he said there was just no comparison. It was like watching a movement happen as opposed to watching this sort of going through the motions, you know, the empty platitudes and the cliches and the one line, you know, one liners. You know, it just didn't compare with what he felt was like real ideas being exchanged.
I think, and you bring up a very interesting point when you juxtapose the two. A lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm with the main convention after Sarah Palin, but for two very different reasons. You mentioned intellectual curiosity, as it were. You know, intellect, arguments and positions, position-packed speech, you said, as opposed to just red meat one-liners, the converted. That's a qualitative difference, isn't it, in enthusiasm, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the big irony was that Ron Paul was not representing a third party here. He was actually, he's a Republican. He's a 10-term congressman, you know, whose views are pretty much within the scope, the sweeping scope of conservatism today. And yet his access to the floor of the Republican convention was limited on purpose. Now, we had talked, you and I, earlier about this sort of, like, you know, almost fascistic, you know, keeping everybody in line. Well, that extended to Ron Paul. He had delegates on the floor, and he's a sitting congressman, and yet they told him that his floor access would be limited, that he wouldn't be able to take his staff on the floor with him. It would be ultimately a embarrassment to him if he were to acquiesce to that. So he made a decision not to go on the floor. But, I mean, the ironies were just unbelievable when it came to Paul.
And, you know, you can juxtapose that with the way Hillary Clinton interacted with the campaign, with the convention.
Right.
That was a potential disaster, wasn't it? On a much larger scale, perhaps, because let's face it, Hillary got 18 million votes.
Right.
Ron Paul's energy and enthusiasm, while not with as many votes behind him, was treated worse than Hillary, you know, apparently. She could have dropped a bomb on that convention, and she wasn't denied any access. In fact, it looks like people bent over backwards to give her everything she wanted.
Well, and another thing, you know, Ron Paul did garner a 1.2 million votes. Now, you might say, well, you know, that's not 18 million votes. But put it in the context that Fred Thompson only got 286,000 votes, and he was a primetime speaker. So it's all about whether you are, you know, your politics is within this sort of sanctioned, you know, reservation. You know, Ron Paul is off the reservation.
Rudy Giuliani got one delegate, and he was a big-time speaker, too.
Oh, and he's a big-time speaker.
And I don't know about you, but when I was watching his speech, I had a stopwatch going, and I wanted to see how many seconds it would be before he figured out a way to bring up September 11th and his role in it. And sure enough, he took a convoluted course, but he got there in the end. He always does. All right, we're going to continue maybe in a little bit. We're going to open up the phone lines, good friends, so that you can ask some questions of Kelly. And we'll pick up again on the Ron Paul theme at that time. Let's continue now, Kelly, with the Sarah Palin effect and what's going on. So many things to talk about. To begin with, I can only imagine that there must have been some pitched battle within the Republican Party over who that VP pick was going to be, because it appears to me they ran the clock out and did not have enough time to adequately vet Sarah Palin, because this struggle must have taken so long that they didn't know who they were going to be going with until quite late in the game. What's your take on the vetting process that, you know, may or may not have happened vis-a-vis Sarah Palin?
Well, you know, all the information that I have, you know, is what I've been reading, you know, and hearing. And there seems to be some disagreement between those who think that Karl Rove is behind the pick and others who believe that somehow McCain bucked Rove directly and picked Palin. So I'm not entirely sure, but whatever, I'm thinking that the last minute pick had something or maybe everything to do with the Democratic convention. It just seems, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, that the picking her was a direct, you know, response to this sort of insecurities and freak out they're probably having after, you know, Obama's huge rally, you know, his wife getting up there and just giving this, belting out this speech, which was just incredible. Hillary Clinton getting on board, Bill Clinton getting on board, Joe Biden giving a pretty darn good speech. You know, and I think that maybe they, you know, but I couldn't tell you, I'm not equipped to tell you if this was a Rovian strategy or an anti-Rovian strategy. I will tell you there's a fun clip from The Daily Show out there on YouTube or wherever that shows, you know, Karl Rove 2 weeks ago making fun of Joe Biden for being, you know, I think it was he was making fun of Joe Biden regarding, you know, what kind of experience does he have? You know, he's just the, he's running this, you know, this tiny state, or he's a senator from this tiny state, and he's making fun. And then you see him last week trying to bolster Sarah Palin's, experience by running, you know, being the mayor of this teeny tiny city, you know, and it just, it was completely, you know, contradictory. And from that, you kind of wonder, okay, how much was he on board if he had to completely shift gears and start defending this woman's, you know, hometown after, you know, 2 weeks before he's making fun of small towns, you know, and small cities.
Let me ask you something, Kelly. My opinion is something other than the two positions that you stated. I think it was somewhere in the middle. I think neither Rove or McCain ended up with who they wanted. And in the vacuum, I believe the conservatives stepped in and said, hey, look, guys, you know, you can pick whoever you want, but unless it's somebody that gets our juices flowing, we may not show up.
Yeah.
And perhaps it was a tiebreaker between the two, and now both of them are sort of playing catch-up to get on board with what has clearly been, in many respects, a very awkward pick. Once you get beyond the converted, who, very wonderfully illustrated, because I wasn't there, I think it was very, very interesting when you said it was like these people got a signal, like a radio beacon got turned on. It turned on a switch. They don't even know this person, and all of a sudden they were all pumped up because they were told to be pumped up about her.
Yeah, and you couldn't really, like, penetrate the talking points. You just gave up. It was like hitting your head against the wall. I interviewed the Alaska delegation, I think it was Wednesday. I went over to their hotel, and I'm sitting around talking to them. Extremely nice people. But they weren't going to be thrown off message. And I talked to them for about an hour, and I just kept asking questions, and I just couldn't get anywhere. And basically, you know, even when I try to be a little tough, and I said, well, what is her worldview? What is her foreign policy? You know, they kept returning to this trope that because she's an expert on energy issues from an Alaskan perspective, that somehow that carried over to a broader, expertise on foreign policy, because it's all about becoming energy independent and not, you know, not being dependent on these tyrannies abroad for our oil imports. And they would not get off that message. And it was almost starting to sound ridiculous to me, but I didn't want to be combative, you know. But it just seemed as though they didn't know. They did not know. And they were from her hometown or her home state, and they didn't know where she stood on the war or, terrorism and, you know, the all of this sort of, you know, layered minutiae of Middle East politics. I mean, things that you really want your president or vice president to know about. We're talking serious business over there in the Middle East, and we don't know word one about her position, if she even knows about these things.
You know,
that was kind of weird.
You raise a very interesting point, too, to put it all on energy and oil. And,
mm-hmm.
and not a global or a national perspective, but an Alaskan perspective on energy and oil. I mean, that's dicey. That's a dicey subject right there, because as I understand it, you know, in the Alaska Constitution, when it comes to the natural resources of the state of Alaska, you could argue that it's quite socialist, in fact, where, you know, the people own the resources and
right.
the people get money from it. I mean, so even that is really kind of stretching it, if you ask me. I think the corporations would love to get rid of those aspects in the Alaska Constitution and get their hands on the whole kit and caboodle instead of this sloppy notion of, you know, the people owning the resources, which, by the way, was enough for us to overturn governments in Iran and Iraq and places like
right.
that, right?
Well, exactly. And the more ironic, almost scary thing aspect to this is that there was a piece in Newsweek this week that talks about, you know, the education of Sarah Palin and how, you know, this small cadre of Bush administration officials were sitting down with her and they were tutoring her in foreign policy. And you're thinking, this is supposed to be an election of change and getting away from this terrible, tattered foreign policy of the Bush administration. And we're being told that this maybe future VP is being schooled by the very people that got us into this mess over in Iraq.
Okay, we'll be right back. We're talking with Kelly Vlahos.
You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Pure energy.
The Rainbow Radio Network.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley on INN World Report Radio every Sunday night, 8 until 10 p.m. Central Time, right here on We the People Radio Network. And we bring you the news the networks won't tell you, and we're certainly going into that tonight with Kelly Bokhar Vlahos, who a journalist who was at the Republican convention last week. And, you know, we're getting some candor here, folks, from a participant in the mainstream media that I think you may agree we haven't really heard on the mainstream media, unless the mics are off, apparently, then that's when we can maybe hear it. But in any case, we're going to open up the mics in the next segment, okay? So if you've got a question, you can start calling later in this segment, and then after the next break, we're going to open up the phone lines. It'll be your turn to pose your own questions to Kelly. You can give us a ring at 512-646-1984. I'll give that number out again a little bit later in this segment. But we'll be opening up the phone lines after the next break. So then, Kelly, let's continue now. You've given us a very good picture, I think, from your perspective anyway, on, you know, what it felt like there in the convention. You gave us a nice picture of what you felt going on at the Ron Paul. We could even call that a sort of a counter convention. Unfortunately, The Republican Party is so thin-skinned that they couldn't even stomach his presence on the floor. And I think, true to his character, he said, you know what, if I'm not welcome, I'm going to go ahead and have my own show. And but back now to the Sarah Palin situation here. It's alarming the way you describe it, that clearly most of the delegates knew very little, if anything, about who Sarah Palin was at the very same time they were purportedly so excited about her. The radio beacon went on. It's in the genetics, it seems, of these diehard Republicans. You know, they get their marching orders. They all move like a school of fish, don't they? You know, they all turn at the same time, right, left, or whatever they're supposed to do. But again, back to the actual substance of the situation. You know, isn't it kind of like what they were accusing Obama of, celebrity and personality, and not more than that?
Yeah, I found I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was one of my first reactions when I got to, you know, when I had gotten to the Republican convention that Wednesday night, I think, when things really started getting to kick in. the night that Sarah Palin spoke, I was thinking, you know, all of the reaction to her that I'm hearing, aside from the, you know, that she is a maverick, that she's independent, that she's a corruption buster, mother of five, there was this sense that, you know, hi, we have our celebrity now. And I found that very ironic because they had spent the week before putting Obama and his wife down as being mere, you know, celebrity figures, you know, pumping them up, you know, or the Democratic Party had pumped them up to be sort of mythological figures at that point. And here they were doing the same thing with Palin. Given the right person, they were all too happy to sort of fall into that themselves. But they continued to be vicious about Barack Obama. And that's another thing that I had noticed, that maybe you can shed some light on this, that I didn't seem to pick up from the Democratic convention, the speeches, that there, if you, you know, look at Rudy Giuliani's speech, even Lieberman's speech, even Sarah Palin's speech, there were these little quick jabs of sort of like kind of vicious little, you know, one-liners and attacks on Obama that I just felt kind of came out of nowhere. And I thought, you know, and they get away with it. You know, nobody calls them on it and saying, you know, one minute you're saying we need to be positive, we need change, and then you zip in some zinger about how Obama's just a community organizer or he has no experience and in a way that's just kind of that's got a sneer to it, you know. And I just don't.
Small town mayor is a bit like being a community organizer, but with responsibility.
You know,
my reaction to that line was community organizers would not be necessary if mayors were living up to their responsibility. But anyhow, I think that's a way to turn that one. But, you know, you said a lot there. Let me go back to a couple of the points that you just raised. How Rovian, right? Obama's drawing huge crowds. He draws 200,000 in Berlin. And suddenly, a politician drawing large, enthusiastic crowds is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's in and of itself bad, and of course it could be for bad reasons, but because we don't have them, okay? Celebrity's bad because we don't have one, okay? Now all of a sudden, the crowds are starting to get bigger thanks to the celebrity of Sarah Palin. And frankly, Kelly, I think at this point it's got to be more celebrity than anything else because nobody knows that much about her. She's not talking to the press, you know, so...
Right.
You have to be functioning on a certain amount of star power, it sounds like, okay? And so suddenly these things that were bad just a week ago are okay now. Now we're not going to talk about that anymore. And they're counting on people having short memories of it. But I think you're right. I think they're also counting on the media not calling them on it. I was at the Democratic convention, and to your other question, they were quite careful. It was palpable. That they wanted to stick to the issues, and if there was going to be criticism about President Bush or about John McCain, it was going to be vis-a-vis the issues and not personality things and not picking things apart and denigrating his service and so forth like that. That seems to be the way it was going. I was pretty flabbergasted, on the one hand, that so much was being said at the Republican convention that was nothing more than, as you point out, digs about Barack Obama. Then on the other hand, logically, there's not much to crow about, is there? I mean, it's like the Republican Party has this awesome task of coming before the American people after 8 years and basically asking for a do-over in the major leagues, no?
Right. And the sad thing is they don't really acknowledge it. And you had mentioned earlier that the mainstream media seems to carry the water for the Republican. You didn't use those words, but seems to carry the water for the Republican machine. And a great example is I had been listening, you know, to the reaction to McCain's speech on Thursday, and more than one commentator on one of, you know, of the, you know, mainstream cable networks had said, you know, tonight John McCain campaigned against his own party. And I was like, okay, what's that all about? I listened to the entire speech, you know. you know, basically they had picked up a few lines of his about how he wasn't happy with how things were going in Washington and that they needed a change. And from that, the mainstream media, or, you know, these pundits that I had heard, had extracted this message that I personally hadn't heard, and were already sort of regurgitating some narrative I guess they were getting from somewhere, from the Republican emails they were getting. But, you know, this sort of narrative that John McCain is campaigning against his own party, from, you know, the sort of the spoils and the corruption of the, you know, Republicans in Washington up until now. And I'm thinking, I didn't hear that in the speech. You know, maybe I wasn't listening, but why
I think you're right. I think they get their talking points on the faxes and on the emails as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a journalist, you know, you got to do your own work. And if you're not doing it, you got to rely on somebody else's ready-made solution for you. And unfortunately, in my opinion, in the corporate media, if you go with the ready-made solution, at least when it's coming from the Republican Party, you're not going to worry about losing your job. Listen, hold on one second. Good friends, we're going to be going on break in just a minute, but if you'd like to join the conversation, we're going to open up the phone lines on the other side of the break. Please give us a call, 512-646-1984. We're speaking with Kelly Bocor Vlahos, a journalist who works for FoxNews.com, for the American Conservative Magazine, a publication started by none other than Patrick Buchanan, and by Homeland Security Today, which is a trade publication for the homeland security industry. And we're going to have a whole separate program where we're going to invite Kelly back to talk about that one, because I know you all have a lot to think about and say about that. We'll be right back after.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. Tom Kiley here on INN World Report Radio every Sunday night, 8 until 10 p.m. Central Time, right here on We the People Radio Network. And we're talking tonight with Kelly Bocor Vlahos, a journalist who works with several different publications, including Fox.com, but most notably with the American Conservative Magazine and Homeland Security Today. Now, that's a subject that we're going to have Kelly back to talk about in more detail. That's not our topic tonight. Tonight we're talking about the Republican convention and how things have changed since the introduction of Sarah Palin. We're also talking about what happened at the Ron Paul counter convention. I think it's safe to say that. And we'd like to have you participate at this point. So give us a ring, 512-646-1984. If you've got a question for Kelly about what she observed there in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, about either of the two conventions, the main one or the Ron Paul one, please give us a ring. 512-646-1984. I know there's a lot of you out there listening. Let's hear it. I've bragged about our great audience to Kelly here on We the People Radio Network, and how informed everybody is and how up-to-date they are, especially when it comes to issues like Ron Paul's candidacy and Homeland Security privacy issues and so forth. Let's participate. Give us a call, 512-646-1984. So now, Kelly, Sarah Palin apparently is being tutored. It sounds kind of like The King and I or Pygmalion or something. Unfortunately, she's not ready for prime time right out of the box. You know, a bullet could hit a bullet, I suppose. Lightning could strike. An ordinary person could rise to the occasion. On that subject, it seems that Ms. Palin relies on divine intervention, as I'm reading. Apparently, when she won the election to become governor, and as I understand it, it was a large reaction to the previous administration in Alaska that was people were very, very upset with. I think she, Murkowski, I think it was, he got only 19% of the vote in a reaction to that. In any case, once she got it, she went to a former minister of hers and said, you know, what does the Bible say? You know, what's an example from the Bible that I can use to know what to do as the governor? It doesn't sound like she's coming with a pretty firm sense of self into these positions, either as the governor or, in this case, now as the VP. Otherwise, one would think she'd be able to start speaking right off the bat to everyone, no?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think this is a story that really is not bubbling to the surface as much as it should be. I think this should be, I mean, we spent how many weeks and months talking about Barack Obama's controversial pastor, the Reverend Wright. We've taken apart his religious past, present, future, where he was sitting, which pew, which sermon he heard, whether he's a Muslim or not. I mean, we know everything, I think, at this point that we need to know about Barack Obama's religious life. I think he's paid for that quite dearly. I mean, that guy went through the gauntlet, and that's fine. I mean, okay, all is fair in love and war and politics, but, I mean, why aren't we giving the same level of scrutiny to Sarah Palin's religious life and background? I mean, here we have stories, and, you know, to be fair, there was a story in the New York Times yesterday regarding this, but is this getting through? Is this getting through to the mainstream media? You know, most people get their news from the television. I mean, let's be frank about it. I mean, you and I, we're getting most of our news probably from the Internet, but I believe most people, the people that are going to be going and pulling a lever, you know, in November, watch these sort of quick, you know, headline-oriented news programs, you know, local news, you know, network news, and I don't think this stuff is getting through. And I don't know why, other than what we had talked about, is this sort of, like, jittery mainstream media not wanting to offend the conservatives. But I think it's fair that we hear about how her religion is informing her, you know, her governance.
Good friends, if you want to join the conversation, and I know some of you got to be out there with some good questions, give us a ring, 512-646-1984. Is it fair, after having scrutinized Barack Obama and his church so carefully for all these months, is it fair to take Sarah Palin up on the same challenge, in particular because she wears it on her sleeve, right? She talks about
yeah.
it. It's
well,
a known commodity.
Right, and we're talking about, you know, Barack Obama was forced to answer for his pastor's views. But here we have an incident where there is a video out there of Sarah Palin speaking before the Wasilla Assembly of God Church, her former church, which she still feels compelled or friendly enough with to go back and speak in June of this year, in which she gives a speech and she talks about how, you know, the soldiers in Iraq are there on a mission from God. It is God's plan that we're there, that we're fighting in Iraq. Now, if this isn't disturbing, I really don't know what it is, but these are her words. This isn't her pastor's words. These are coming from her mouth. So I find that even more disturbing than anything that Reverend Wright might have been ranting about, because with Barack Obama, it was a case almost of guilt by association, you know, and we could talk about the level of guilt that he, you know, or the things he should have answered for, whether he should have stayed in the church or gone to another church. But this is something that's coming out of her mind, and you point out, too, that she had called up a pastor the day after she's, you know, elected governor. How would the great leaders of the Bible, you know, run the state of Alaska? I mean, that's a whole other bag of chips, I think, that we're talking about here.
And there's more as well that comes out, and as you aptly point out, you don't get this through the mainstream media. You have to go to the alternative sources. You have to dig for it yourself on the Internet. But I think it's widely known at this point as well that when she became the mayor of her town, Wasilla, at some point she had a meeting with the town librarian and discussed
yes.
with the woman, what can only be described as having certain books banned and what her position would be on that subject. I don't know at this point, and I'm going to endeavor to find out, good friends. I don't know which books she was talking about, and I don't know the motivation. Presumably, it may have something to do with her religious beliefs, okay? But when the librarian told her no, that's not what I do. That's not what I'm going to do. Apparently, Sarah Palin had the woman fired. So and subsequently, because she was such a popular librarian, thanks to We the People in Wasilla, she got her job back. But what the heck was that all about? I mean,
yeah.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, everything we're talking about here, whether it's book banning or seeing the hand of God in our war policy, you know, the idea that she, the whole issue about her advocating the teaching of creationism alongside evolution in science class, you know, for a lot of people in this country, that speaks of a sort of backward, you know, moving backward as opposed to forward in our own, you know, national evolution. And I'm not here, I don't want to insult people who believe in, you know, intelligent design or who have religious views that inform the way they view politics. But I think that there's a big difference about a person in her position, which is a governor of a state, using or at least, you know, being in a position where she can use her religious views or at least be to inform her governance of a state through her religious views. Does this risk her using the power of the state to impose her religious views? Some people
that's a question that should be asked if the media was either capable of asking that question through its own intestinal fortitude or simply by having the proximity to Sarah Palin, which they don't have as of yet, to ask the question.
Right.
I think both of those are big question marks if you ask me. Good friends, give us a call, 512-646-1984. I know we're touching on some subjects that are near and dear to you. So if you'd like to chime in, this is your opportunity. We're going to be going on break in just a moment, but we'll be taking calls on the other side if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's continue with this. It's quite a topic. Kelly, have you briefly, because we're going to be going off, have you been able to write about Sarah Palin much yet, or is this still a new subject for you?
Not very much. Maybe at the convention a little bit, but not very extensively yet.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing what you do put in print, and hopefully our discussion tonight will give you some insights. Good friends, we'll be back in just a few moments with Kelly Vlahos after these messages. Good friends, we're back. That's some of our great bumper music. There's some Ozark gospel music, Standing on the Rock, okay, since we're talking about that sort of thing tonight. And let me give you the number one more time, 512-646-1984. My producer, Adam, tells me a lot of you are trying to call and get in, and then for some reason you're not hanging on long enough. Let's see. I'm going to try this. I think this is Jerry in Texas. See that? We just lost him. Give us a call and hang in there. I doubt if it's technical difficulties. Maybe it is, but I see plenty of callers coming up and then not being on there long enough to actually be clicked on. Jerry, if you're listening, please give us a ring back. Anyway, while we're working on that, Kelly, what else? I mean, I didn't even get into with you the whole controversy about the family aspect. Okay, let me touch on that briefly. First of all, I feel that normally speaking, you know, the personal lives of a candidate's family are just that, personal. On the other hand, if there's an aspect about a personal life that runs counter to a public position, then I think it's fair game. Then you run the risk of hypocrisy rearing its ugly head. And number one, and I'm speaking, of course, of the situation with Sarah Palin's pregnant 17-year-old daughter. Okay. Number two, however, even that aside, human nature being as interested in salacious material as it is, I don't see how John McCain could possibly have meant what he said when he says he knew about this in the vetting process and he went forward with it. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I kind of probably agree with that, and I know you and I had talked about this earlier. I think that there are some things that he did know and probably ignored in order to have her on his ticket, but I don't think that he could have possibly known this whole business with her daughter and still wanted to go forward, knowing that she would just, it would come out almost immediately after her announcement. From what I've been reading, you know, things have been, you know, circulating, you know, in Alaska about these and other issues for months. And it's just too small of a place for secrets to be kept. And I just, the thing about this is that you're right. I mean, the hypocrisy, there's a potential for this really glaring hypocrisy. But on the other hand, I think the Republicans were betting that Democrats would be hard-pressed to push this issue because they are the liberals. They're the ones who defend pregnant teenagers. They're the ones that defend, you know, more liberal attitudes, more tolerant attitudes towards these things. So it's really not their bailiwick to go around, you know, pumping their fist against unwed teenage mothers. And I think that they're betting, I mean, at least when the news came out, that the Democrats would be hard-pressed to push this storyline. And they immediately came out and started attacking the media, if you recall, by saying, how dare you go after this poor 17-year-old girl? And part of me kind of agrees that maybe there is this risk of seeming like bullies going after a 17-year-old girl. But I think the immediate attack on the media was probably
shoot the messenger. You know.
shoot the messenger. And guess what? It works a lot. It does, because the media is already battered and tattered, and conservatives.
And count.
Yeah, and that is right. Just red meat. You heard it in the speeches. If they didn't take less than, you know, six swipes at the media in each speech, I'd be surprised.
Well, a couple of things really quickly. You're absolutely right. I think progressives and liberals tend to be a lot more understanding about this.
Yeah.
But no thanks to the Sarah Palins in the world who are seemingly very intolerant about it when it comes to trying to educate our young people on how to avoid this situation. Her best advice, which I would think she would want to legislate if she had the opportunity to, is to just preach abstinence, and obviously it doesn't work in her own family. So I think that makes it fair game. Anyhow, Jerry is back on. Oh, Jerry just went off, but we have another call. Here we go. There's some kind of problem. Good evening. Welcome to INN World Report Radio. Who are we speaking with tonight here? Okay. I guess we're still screening that call, so I'm going to turn that call back off again. All right, here we go. Let's try Jerry in Texas. Jerry, are you there? Jerry, hello? Well, it seems, good friends, our technical difficulties are continuing because now I can see the callers, but they're not coming online when I'm trying to get them to. I'm going to try this one more time. Good evening, Jerry. Are you there in Texas tonight? Maybe not. Okay. Well, thank you for trying anyway. I'll continue to try to get through. Good friends, I apologize. We had some technical difficulties earlier in the evening. We've worked that out now with our guests and so forth, but we still seem to be having them somewhat with the callers. Sarah Palin's family we're talking about and her daughter. I agree. It's something that you shouldn't go into, other than the fact that this is something that I believe Sarah Palin brought on herself, both in terms of, you know, her previous position on teenage pregnancy, but also, you know, accepting this position, knowing full well that it would be putting her daughter under the spotlight. No.
Yeah, and I also, another thing that struck me as kind of ironic was that there were a lot of female Republican pundits and surrogates on the air last week talking about how wonderful it was that Sarah Palin has, you know, five children, and she manages to have this, you know, full-throated career as a, you know, as she's the governor of the state, and how dare anybody question whether or not she's a good mother or not, or maybe she should be spending more time with her infant son with special needs, you know, 5-6 months after he was born, you know, and it was sort of like a dare. I dare you liberal progressive women to even cast any doubt on, you know, this woman's ability to be both mother and career woman. And that made me kind of laugh, because some of these women, these Republican women, were the same women who back in the 90s, or as recently as a few years ago, or maybe even last week, would sit there and wax authoritatively about how the feminist movement had ruined, you know, families and mothers and families in this country by preaching that women can have it all. And there, I can't even tell you how many conservative women have told me personally that they felt the Gloria Steinems of the world had basically visited this terrible thing on families by preaching to women that they can both be career women and mothers, and that they should be basically home, not hiring nannies to raise their children. And here we have a situation where they're defending.
It's upside down.
Yeah, it's upside down.
I mean, literally, you've got, you know, for instance, like we said before, if this was Obama's daughter,
right,
Bill Bennett would be out there leading the charge, wagging his finger. The Peggy Nunes. Oh my God, what would we hear from what's her name there? The name is
Phyllis Schlafly.
Well, not just her, but Coulter, Ann Coulter, for instance.
Oh,
oh my
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, this would have been, you know, more evidence of the downfall of the Western civilization, okay? And yet, hey, you know, so they're holding this girl up almost as an example. Thank God they're blessed and so forth. Let's try
right.
Jerry again. All right, Jerry, here we go, good friend. We got you there, Jerry.
How are you? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you for being so patient and getting through. We had some difficulties. It's your turn. We got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes left in the program. Go for it.
All right, I've got a very unique viewpoint for archaeology, going back, looking at their time frames, how they view ancient sites, and may have some viewpoint on timeline. What I'm getting at is, imagine if you take like a steel bar, you lay it on the ground, in 500 years, it's turned to dust. So there's nothing to view other than this line of dust on the ground. So what I'm getting at is, if in the past there has been any use of metals and building showing a little bit more advanced use, could it be possible that when the archaeologists go out and find these sites, that they dig through the rust, miss those things that could possibly have been there, and all they find is what will survive over all of these centuries is like pieces of pottery and stone, because that man that was found frozen up in the Alps, the guy that was shot with the arrow that was thousands of years old, it's like something, he had a brass axe, and it...
Well, you know what? That is certainly a new take on the paleoconservative, I must say, Kelly. I agree. Maybe, Jerry, maybe we've come full circle. We were more advanced than we are today back in the past, but the only thing left as evidence of it is the pottery. You know, we had